Diverging Paths, Part 4. The sixth story in Reentry, a Star Wars fanfiction series, written by Flamethrower and read by Chantress. "I'm guessing things didn't go well," Anakin said in a muffled voice. He was inside the hyperdrive up to his shoulders, connecting lines with his hands instead of using the more time-consuming tools. Qui-Gon speared a quick glance at Padme, who was pretending to be engrossed in passing couplings to Anakin.
"It went about as well as could be expected."
"He's being kind," Obi-Wan said. He was leaning against the wall across from Qui-Gon, watching the drive's installation progress with red-rimmed eyes. Qui-Gon had tried to get him to rest instead of holding up the wall, but Obi-Wan had insisted he wanted to see the repairs done first. Qui-Gon couldn't really blame him for the paranoia. After their confrontation with the dark-garbed creature in the desert, he was feeling a bit paranoid himself. Obi-Wan looked at Qui-Gon, as if hearing the thought.
"We're all alive and safe, so I still place this one in the win column."
"If you wind up with a price on your head again, it'll be your own fault," Anakin declared, popping out of the drive. His face was smudged with black dust from forehead to chin. "We can remount the drive now." It was short work to put the casing back on, and then Anakin waved for Padme to activate the mechanism that would return the hyperdrive back to its cradle. It settled into place with a solid snap of electrical conduits refitting. "It is supposed to do that, right?" Padme asked, both eyebrows rising in concern.
"Yeah, and thank the Force it was snap and not pop," Anakin muttered as he toggled the intercom.
"That's it, Rick. Power it up."
"All right, kid," Rick responded. "If she fails to burn, I'm firing you."
The deck vibrated beneath their feet as the hyperdrive engaged with a sharp whine. Qui-Gon winced at the harsh cry. Padme slapped her hands over her ears.
"Is it supposed to do that?" she shouted.
"Baby motivator," Anakin shouted back, grinning. "They all cry like that the first time out."
The ear-piercing whine subsided after almost a full minute of squealing, replaced by the low hum of a properly refitted drive.
"We are officially in hyperspace, folks," Rick announced through the intercom. "Next stop, Coruscant."
"Thanks, Rick," Anakin said, and turned off the comm.
"Well, now we're definitely safe."
"For the moment." Padme turned and gave Obi-Wan a stern glare.
"I don't expect to see you again until you're recovered from whatever it was that happened on Tatooine."
"That may be a while," Obi-Wan hedged.
"Then it takes a while," the young queen retorted.
"Go fix it, Master Obi-Wan. There are more Jedi aboard my ship than just you." Obi-Wan held up his hands in a sign of surrender.
"Yes, Your Highness. It will be fixed, I promise."
Padme didn't look convinced, but she let it go. "Master Qui-Gon, I must confer with my handmaidens and plot a course of action for our arrival on Coruscant. Will you be available later? I know very little about what to expect."
"Of course, Your Highness," Qui-Gon replied, bowing his head. "It will be my pleasure."
"Anakin, I'm afraid I don't have orders for you," Padme said, smiling.
"Yeah, but there's a big shiny cockpit at the front of the ship, and it has lots of buttons."
Anakin grinned. Believe me, I know how to entertain myself. Go do diplomatic stuff. I'm bad at that anyway. Their small group separated at the first corridor junction. Qui-Gon followed Obi-Wan back to the small cabin the three of them had been assigned, and wasn't pleased until Obi-Wan had stripped to the waist and settled down on the bunk furthest from the door. "You are such a mother hen," Obi-Wan grumbled, curling up on his side. Qui-Gon smiled and knelt down beside the bunk.
"Sometimes. I don't know how I'll be able to sleep, let alone trance down," Obi-Wan admitted, after they did nothing more than sit quietly together. "I've been thinking about that moment with the Sith for a long time now." "Tell me," Qui-Gon said. "I'd like to know." "You and Anakin were down there alone."
Obi-Wan sighed as he did his best to get comfortable. Qui-Gon sympathized. The bunks were hard, more like benches than beds.
"There was no warning. 1 minute, you and Anakin were almost to the ship. And the next, there was a Sith trying to kill you both. Anakin made it to the ship while you kept him distracted."
Obi-Wan told him of how the rest of the encounter had gone. Much like before, there had been an escape via the ship's open boarding ramp. He managed to relay what had happened up until their arrival on Coruscant, and then fell asleep mid-sentence. Qui-Gon sighed and nudged Obi-Wan the rest of the way into a healing trance, hoping it dealt with the remaining effects of the spice exposure. He had a bad feeling that there were new problems awaiting them on Coruscant, and adding the reality of the Sith was only going to make them worse. Their 2 days of hyperspace travel were uneventful, at least. Anakin continued to be the darling of the pilots, while Queen Amidala spent much of her time locked away with her handmaidens and Panaka, debating strategy. Qui-Gon had little to offer them aside from landing protocol, and what to expect if the Chancellor was able to greet them as he'd once promised. He and Amidala both felt it would be wiser to make further decisions after testing the current political waters. Qui-Gon renewed the healing trance several times before Obi-Wan could regain consciousness, set on having his partner fully healed by the time they returned home. Then there was no time left. Qui-Gon entered the cabin once more to find his partner facing the door, still asleep and probably cycling through the last trance suggestion. Obi-Wan had pulled the thin blanket up until it was almost covering his head. Qui-Gon was loath to disturb him before the healing trance was complete, but there was no longer a choice. He leaned down to touch his partner's shoulder.
"Obi-Wan?"
Obi-Wan's hand flashed out and grasped Qui-Gon's wrist, his fingers digging into a nerve cluster before Qui-Gon could react. He resisted the urge to pull away, ignoring combat instincts that would have him following through with a more violent counter.
"Are you feeling any better?" Qui-Gon asked in a mild voice.
That was not quite the reaction he'd expected. Obi-Wan's eyes flickered open, muted gray and green. He looked up at him with a tiny smile.
"Yes?"
Qui-Gon winced as the nerves in his arm started to protest the applied pressure. Message received. He might have been overzealous with the healing trances.
"You've proven your point, I think. Would you mind letting go?"
The pressure lessened, But Obi-Wan kept his grip on Qui-Gon's wrist long enough to leave behind the pins and needles sensation of a brief force healing. All was forgiven then. Obi-Wan sat up, brushing his hair out of his eyes. Where are we?
In orbit above Coruscant, waiting for clearance to land.
Qui-Gon rubbed at his wrist, uncertain if he was hunting for damage, or just enjoying the echo of Obi-Wan's touch.
I'm sorry. I take it you finally lost patience with being ordered to sleep?
Gods, yes, Obi-Wan retorted, swinging his legs over the side of the bunk.
I can't believe you kept me under for the entire trip, he grumbled,
and then smiled up at Qui-Gon, rueful.
But I have to thank you. It's a relief to finally be well-rested.
You're welcome, Qui-Gon replied, trying not to be utterly distracted by how the blanket had fallen down to rest around his partner's hips. He'd seen the other man without a shirt before, but... well, he was paying more attention now.
You'll be glad to know that I managed to get your clothes aired out. None of us will reek of hard travel when meeting the Chancellor on the landing platform.
Clean, unstained tunics would have been preferable, especially since they had been living in the same clothes for almost a week, but the Queen's ship was meant for short travels with smaller complements. It didn't have any sort of washing system aside from what the onboard freshers offered.
Perhaps the Radiant Seven's crew will have returned our things to the temple, Qui-Gon added.
That would be nice. I'd hate to have to replace our kits again so soon. A thoughtful frown appeared on Obi-Wan's face.
How much time do we have until landing?
Qui-Gon consulted his internal sense of time, which he trusted more than shipboard chronos.
About 2 hours, given Rick Oley's estimates. Why?
With Anakin's help, the Naboo pilot had managed to fit the ship into a diplomatic slot in Coruscant's traffic patterns, one that would gain them landing clearance faster than the public routes. Even then, the wait time was far longer than usual. Qui-Gon suspected an unexpected session of Congress, given the flooding of the diplomatic lanes. He'd suggested that landing in the temple would get them to ground faster, but Amidala had refused, saying she would land in keeping with Naboo's sovereignty. Obi-Wan's eyes widened.
2 hours? Damn! He swore,
launching himself from the bunk and grabbing the folded tunics on the other bunk. It was still entertaining to watch a man force himself into clothes that were designed to be donned slowly.
What's wrong?
Qui-Gon asked, catching a hint of Obi-Wan's urgency. Despite the nature of their traditional garb, Obi-Wan managed to get dressed faster than Qui-Gon would have suspected was possible, even after decades of practice.
There's something that's been on my mind, and this is the only opportunity that I've had to look for it,
Obi-Wan said, tucking the long sash properly around his waist before tossing his belt over his shoulder.
I'm claiming the observation lounge and sealing the privacy lock. I need to be alone for this, or I don't think it's going to work.
He tossed a hurried glance over his shoulder as he palmed open the door.
And yes, I'll tell you what I'm talking about. Later, when time isn't such a concern.
Qui-Gon watched him go, curiosity aroused by his partner's sudden departure. Then his eyes fell on Obi-Wan's boots, abandoned in his haste. Laughing, Qui-Gon picked them up and tucked them under one arm. He had no idea what his partner was up to, but in the meantime, he had to finish his written report to the Council. They were going to have an apoplectic fit as soon as he mentioned the word Seth. When he was certain that the privacy lock had engaged, Obi-Wan sat down, cross-legged, on the floor of the lounge. The unexpected recovery time that Qui-Gon had granted him was going to be beneficial. He could not be more rested for what he was about to attempt. Obi-Wan watched the parade of traffic float past the Transparis steel window, letting it lull him. The glow from distant reflected lights and glistening hulls, the shifting shadows in the room, all of the moving patterns that made up the spatial grid of Coruscant's sky. His breath steadied from his sprint through the Nubian ship's corridors, then shortened, growing slight and quiet until his chest barely moved. He tranced down, inward, reaching farther into himself than he did for standard meditation. This was going to require the connection to the Force he had once worked so hard to build. Obi-Wan had carefully hidden that strength away not long after he had awoken into impossibility. Once again, 16 standard, with his head full to bursting with all of the memories of his old life. Too many Jedi had been disconcerted by the intensity of his presence in the Force. Some had even claimed to be blinded by it. For their sake, for his own privacy, for his worries about what the future might bring, he had hidden. "Perhaps I went too far," Obi-Wan reflected, when it took more effort than he'd expected to reopen those old pathways. Obi-Wan gasped when the gentle warmth of the Force filled him, heightening his awareness in a way that was exhilarating, and sometimes frightening. He had missed this so damn much. On Tatooine, there had been no reason to put any of this aside, and every reason to bask in it. Here, though... He sighed, seized by a fierce melancholy for the desert. Obi-Wan opened his eyes, but this time he did not see the lounge, or the view of the traffic grid outside. Instead, there were endless stars. He could see the life force of every being that surrounded him, dancing in the Force. Anakin was fierce joy in flight and good humor in companionship. Padme, Queen Amidala, was grim determination and nagging fear that her best would not be enough to safeguard her people. Qui-Gon was bright strength, chased by threads of unease as he struggled to compose their mission report. He had just written the word Sith and was staring at it, feeling like the world had turned itself upside down. Obi-Wan could also feel the love that Qui-Gon had for him, burning in the Force like unceasing flame. He paused to bask in that glow. He'd suspected that Qui-Gon had almost acted on his newfound feelings several times, only to be interrupted at each pivotal moment. "I should have done this a long time ago," he thought. All the confirmation he would ever need about his place in Qui-Gon Jinn's heart was rather obvious from this point of view. It was a great temptation to reach out and touch what he could sense, but Obi-Wan refrained. They were already so close to finally bridging that long divide. He could wait a little bit longer. "You will find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view," He remembered then, the sudden understanding in Luke Skywalker's eyes as Obi-Wan tried to explain why he'd acted as he had, told the half-truths of Anakin's fate and Darth Vader's rise. During his muddled attempts to reconcile himself to this new life and time, Obi-Wan had forgotten his own lesson. He felt a moment's intense shame for that failure, and then let it go. There was no undoing it. He could only go forward. He could no longer afford the easy paths. That time was over. Obi-Wan turned his attention to Coruscant. It was the closest, brightest light in the endless field, a great jumble of so many lights living so close together. With the proper focus, he could turn that swirling, chaotic light into individual points and look at each being in turn. He was partially aware when some of the smaller, fitted deck plates began to lift free of their foundations. Each bit of plating floated around the room, mimicking the pattern outside. The plates flowed from one point to the next, never meeting, always changing. Not there, he thought, when the answer he was seeking did not reveal itself. He centered again upon himself and noticed. Yes. There. A thread that did not belong. One that reached out from the planet itself. It was so subtle that he'd missed it at first. He tried to get rid of it and could not. He couldn't even grasp it, which was frustrating. Fine. He centered upon himself, within himself, and began constructing a new shield. Strand by strand, he placed the lines of the Force, linking the shielding directly to his core self. If constructed correctly, nothing would be able to influence his thoughts but the Force itself. When he came to the bonds he shared with Qui-Gon, Anakin, and Yoda, he paused. There was no escaping this part. I'm sorry, he sent to the first two. Yoda would just have to yell at him later. It will only be for a short time, he promised, and then continued with his shield construct, blocking the influence of both of the bonds. Obi-Wan managed not to wince when the influence was lost. It was not permanent, and the bonds would not be harmed. But the Force was gathering itself like a disturbed, angry hive of bees. It prodded at him, trying to determine why Obi-Wan had chosen to do such a thing. No harm. No harm, Obi-Wan whispered back, touching and being touched by the currents around him. It was intimate and familiar. It was harsh and unyielding. I need to be able to see. Show me what you see, he asked. Let me see. He knew better than most that the Force was not an entity, or even sentient. However, there were times when it felt like he had the attention of some great, magnificent other. The Force answered his plea, and Obi-Wan gritted his teeth as a shroud he hadn't even known existed was ripped from his mind. Qui-Gon made sure Anakin was presentable, checking for two obvious grease stains while they waited in the corridor for Obi-Wan to join them. In the ship's hold a few meters away, The Queen's retinue was going through a last-minute review before disembarkation. Just when Qui-Gon was considering contacting him via comm, he saw Obi-Wan approaching.
"I didn't think you were going to make it," Qui-Gon said in a quiet voice,
and then handed Obi-Wan his misplaced footwear. Obi-Wan stared at his boots for a moment, as if realizing only then that there was cold deck plating beneath his sock-clad feet.
"For a moment, neither did I," he said,
leaning against the wall to tug on his boots without regard for dignity. Obi-Wan took Anakin's hand, and then grasped Qui-Gon's hand as well. Qui-Gon was surprised by the openness of the gesture. While their touching had become more common of late, it had never happened around others. Then he sensed the strength of the emotions churning in his partner's mind, and glanced down at him in amazement. Obi-Wan was furious. There were faint, telling sparks in his eyes, and a grim set to his jaw. Anakin looked up at him in concern.
"What is it, Master?"
"Sorry, Padawan. I am very angry with myself right now," Obi-Wan replied. "I thought that if anyone could make me feel better, it would be the two people I care about most in the universe."
Qui-Gon let loose a soft sigh of relief when the shields over the Parabond thinned back down to normal, and could hear the echo of it when the same was done with Anakin's training bond. The Parabond opened on a dark cloud of anger, but it was slowly, systematically, being displaced by chaos. His surface thoughts were swirling, half-formed, with random notions intertwined until it was so much meaningless gibberish. It was, Qui-Gon realized, a brilliant, misleading new layer to Obi-Wan's already excellent shielding.
"Can you sense what I'm doing to my shields?" Obi-Wan asked.
Panaka stuck his head into the corridor and gestured. They entered the room and greeted Queen Amidala in full regalia, still being played by Sabe. Everyone else was armed. Panaka had stuffed enough cobbled-together weaponry into his and the Naboo's garb that the group could fight a small war.
"Yes," Qui-Gon answered, and Anakin gave a slight nod. "That's a hell of a mess." "I want you both to do the same," Obi-Wan said. "Copy what you see of mine if you must, but do it."
He exchanged a sober nod with Panaka, who had been irritated with Obi-Wan's absence during the landing. Panaka was no great fan of the Jedi, not after their initial disagreements over the Queen's safety. After Qui-Gon had given the man an abridged version of what had been done to acquire the ship's new motivator, they had at least been granted Panaka's grudging respect. Anakin smiled at Padme, in her guise as handmaiden, while trying to create the nonsense layer of shielding. Qui-Gon, more slowly, began to do the same. He had kept his mind well-ordered for a long time, and the nature of that shielding layer was going to give him one hell of a headache.
"Why are we doing this?"
Qui-Gon asked, when he thought he had a good semblance of the gibberish shielding in place. Obi-Wan gave him a quick glance, keeping most of his attention on the Naboo group.
"There is someone on Coruscant that might be looking this way. My shielding the three of us would be more obvious."
Qui-Gon felt his earlier unease become true alarm.
"How long?"
Obi-Wan's eyes flickered over those assembled, taking note of each of the Naboo. His gaze lingered longest on Jar Jar Binks, who was hanging back from the main group and looking very much out of place. Something akin to sympathy wound its way through Obi-Wan's thoughts. Until we're back inside the temple. It wasn't quite the answer Qui-Gon had been looking for, but it would do for now. There would be time for more questions later. The boarding ramp lowered with a pneumatic hiss. The rescued pilots exited first, followed by the ship's crew. Both groups would line up on one side of the craft. Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, and Anakin went next, taking up position on the opposite side as a neutral counter to the evident armed guard. There should have been no danger on Coruscant, no malice or threat from those waiting to greet them. But after Tatooine, the Naboo were not in the mood to take chances. Queen Amidala walked down the ramp, flanked by Panaka and the handmaidens. Senator Palpatine greeted her, all smiles and what looked to be genuine relief to see his queen safe. Chancellor Valorum came forward to meet Amidala and her retinue when Palpatine introduced him. Qui-Gon hid a frown. Finnis's greeting was very succinct, far more neutral than Qui-Gon expected to hear from someone who had been championing the Naboo in public not 2 weeks previous. The decoy queen accepted their greetings with a nod, responding in kind. Qui-Gon didn't know who had chosen Sabe for her role, but between the elaborate costume and the ceremonial makeup, the only way to tell the true queen from her decoy was by their differing force signatures. Padme was an unobtrusive hooded figure lurking among the other handmaidens, but her eyes flickered left, glancing at the Jedi. Qui-Gon suspected that she was well aware of the strange undercurrents of this meeting. Palpatine gave the queen another wide, warm smile, directing her towards one of the waiting speeders. From what Qui-Gon could hear, the senator had already launched into detailed plans for presenting the Naboo petition to the Senate. With the queen's retinue moving on, Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, and Anakin took the opportunity to walk forward, greeting the Chancellor with formal bows. "I'm glad to see you're all right," Finnis said in a low voice, gripping Qui-Gon's hand. "When the Radiant Seven reported in and said they'd come under attack, I feared the worst." "We're resourceful, Chancellor. You should know that by now," Obi-Wan said with an impish grin, shaking Valorum's hand. "I'm afraid that I must leave you here. My Padawan and I are to accompany the Queen to the Senate Dome." "That's news to me," Qui-Gon said, refusing to allow his surprise to show. Anakin was not yet so skilled, and his lack of awareness of their new task was written starkly across his face. He recovered quickly, but still lifted his head to give his master a quizzical look. "I know." Obi-Wan's expression faltered. Underneath his cheerful greeting, he appeared deeply concerned. "I promised you an explanation, Qui-Gon, and I swear you will get it. For now, consider us an extra protection detail, Chancellor. I do not think our presence will be amiss." Finnis shook his head. "I dare say your presence will not be frowned upon. Be careful, Obi-Wan. And you too, Padawan Skywalker," he said, reaching down to clasp hands with Anakin, who grinned back in recognition of the gesture. Qui-Gon thought they had the potential to become friends, at least away from the media's prying eyes. If one was going to choose a friendship with a politician, Finnis was a good choice. Qui-Gon and Valorum watched Obi-Wan and Anakin rejoin the Naboo. Qui-Gon felt a sharp return of his earlier unease. Things are happening right now, and I still have little idea what to expect, he thought. It was frustrating, but there was nothing to do but keep trudging forward. He filled Valorum in on what had occurred since they shipped out from Coruscant. Finnis sighed and pinched the bridge of his nose.
Well, my friend, my migraine just increased in size. You've been out of the loop long enough that you don't know what's happened.
No, I don't.
Qui-Gon followed Valorum as the Chancellor walked towards the edge of the landing platform.
What is it? Dealing with the Senate could give anyone fits, but you look unwell.
Charges were filed against me by the committee.
Oh, they're baseless, just like everything else that's floating around, Valorum continued,
waving off Qui-Gon's shocked protest as he stared at the Senate dome in the distance.
I think this might finally be it. I don't know why these accusations of incompetence have been following me around, but I confess that I'm relieved that it will be over soon. I was never cut out for this sort of thing anyway.
Qui-Gon shook his head, refuting the man's self-flagellation.
Your refusal to become a career politician is exactly why you were perfect for the position of Chancellor. You refuse to play the standard games, and that will always infuriate the naysayers. This will pass, just like everything else of late. The Senate just needs a scapegoat, and the media's involvement in highlighting these non-existent scandals never helps.
I hope you're right.
Finnis turned his head and gave Qui-Gon a faint smile.
Well, except for your belief that I'm cut out for this role.
However, I think it may be too little, too late. I fear this scapegoat has already been marked. My powers have been restricted to such a point that I can do little but wait for the vote to be called.
Qui-Gon stared at the man who had been his friend for a number of years, their association beginning late in Qui-Gon's apprenticeship. He'd sat with Finnis when word came of his successful election as Chancellor, and then helped calm him when Finnis had done nothing more than put his head between his knees and profess his desire to pass out at the news. He had worked for Chancellor Valorum, off and on, for the past 6 years, feeling genuine pleasure at each task. Finnis was one of the few senior officials in the Senate that Qui-Gon trusted. Too many of them were mired in bureaucracy, wasting time with pointless efforts while ignoring true problems. There were more than a few junior senators rising through the ranks now, young ones who were angry with the way their seniors were demolishing their government. Those junior representatives showed promise, but their time had not yet come. Qui-Gon didn't believe that anyone else could unite the Senate, new blood and old, except for the man before him.
Then let's do something about it, he said at last,
feeling an idea beginning to form.
Let's give them a new scapegoat.
The wind caught at Valorum's formal robes of office, pulling the fabric towards the edge of the platform.
What do you have in mind, Master Jedi?
A press conference, Qui-Gon suggested,
performed before the Queen of Naboo makes her appearance in the Senate. Speak of everything that we've told you about the embargo of Naboo. Use mine and Obi-Wan's names if you must. The placement of Naboo's citizens into those damn camps will catch the media's attention if nothing else. You may give Queen Amidala more power to sway the Senate, and that could build your own strength. Your fellow senators have been complaining for too long that the Chancellor of the Republic is ineffective. Show them that they're wrong.
Tell them that you've already pledged to do all in your power to help the Naboo.
Finis shook his head. Qui-Gon, you and I both know that with the charges filed, I no longer have any power.
I know that, Qui-Gon said, smiling. But the media does not. Or at least they will not care. Sensationalism trumps facts far too often. This time, use it to your advantage, not theirs.
Valorum looked up into Coruscant's busy sky, mulling it over.
It's a start, at least, he said at last. Qui-Gon, why can't I have you as my political advisor? Instead, I must resort to those dunderheads sitting in my office like overbearing lumps.
Qui-Gon couldn't help a tight grin.
Because I hate politicians, Finis. I would go insane and burn that damn Senate dome down after one too many questions about what I had for lunch 2 cycles ago.
Finis barked out a laugh, as if surprised that he could still do so.
That's true. I'm glad you're my friend, Qui-Gon.
Likewise, Qui-Gon replied, gripping Finis's hand anew when the other man offered.
There was more confidence shining in Valorum's eyes, and Qui-Gon was glad to see it.
I have to admit to some confusion, Finis murmured as they returned to the cluster of blue-robed Republic guards, keeping watch over the platform in the Chancellor's private air car.
You've always claimed neutrality when it comes to dispensing political advice. What has changed?
Qui-Gon considered the question. Obi-Wan, he thought. And then he remembered the face of the Zabrak Sith he'd just faced.
Everything. A lot, Qui-Gon said aloud. And not all of it is good. I must go, Finis. There are things I need to share with the Council as well.
Good hunting, then, Finis said with a smile.
The other man was long familiar with Qui-Gon's tendency to butt heads with the Jedi Council.
May the Force be with you, my friend.
With 2 separate airspeeders employed to get the entirety of the Naboo contingent to the Senate, mix-ups were bound to happen. Obi-Wan and Anakin's transport got lost in the shuffle, to Obi-Wan's frustration. The two of them conversed with the pilots, with Obi-Wan finally directing them to Palpatine's office for further information. He wasn't quite sure where the rest of the Naboo ended up, but he knew where Queen Amidala would soon be. It took at least an hour to navigate the lower floors of the Senate dome. Senators and their aides, junior senators and their aides, sycophants, maintenance, all were flocking towards the cavernous room that housed the Republic's governing body.
Is it just me? Or is this happening much faster than it did before?
Obi-Wan snagged Anakin by the hand and pulled him out of the way of the Zarkothan delegation before the overzealous, weighty beings tried to mow down his Padawan.
Geez, what's their hurry? Anakin grumbled.
Obi-Wan left Anakin to look for reports of the Naboo invasion, hoping for any little scrap that they could offer Padme. He finally found the girl in full regal dress, standing alone in one of the Senate observation rooms. The main view screen revealed the massive Senate chamber, with its various pods filling up as representatives arrived. Obi-Wan wasn't sure when Padme had found the time to switch places with Sabe, but her grooming was impeccable. She didn't acknowledge his presence, but Obi-Wan knew she was aware of him.
What are you going to do?
Queen Amidala turned in place, smiling at him before she went to a bench and sat down, her massive skirt fanning out in a perfect arc. Obi-Wan sat beside her in a relaxed slouch when she gestured, in direct contrast to her stiff, costume-created posture. Chancellor Valorum did as he promised, and called for an emergency meeting of the Senate. "It will begin in an hour," Amidala told him, folding her hands in her lap with short, precise movement. "I will plead my case before the Senate and hope for results." Obi-Wan raised an eyebrow. This was definitely faster than the first time he'd lived through these events. Then, Anakin had the time to see the temple for the first time, visit Amidala's Senate guest quarters, and then return to see the Jedi Council, all before Palpatine started the presentation of the Naboo petition. There had been hours to prepare, not this enforced rush.
"You seem less confident in their involvement than before," he said. "One problem at a time."
Amidala frowned, an expression turned mournful by her makeup. "I've been informed that the Senate will be less inclined to aid us than I was previously led to believe." She looked at Obi-Wan, a hint of entreaty in her gaze. "Tell me, Master Jedi, what do you think will occur?" Obi-Wan knew exactly what was going to happen. That was the entire damn problem.
"I'll be honest, Your Highness. Chancellor Valorum has done all he can, at least through the public venues. Any further action must be decided by the Senate."
"You speak of the charges filed against the Chancellor by the Appropriations Committee." Amidala narrowed her eyes. "Senator Palpatine has explained to me that they limit his power, even during a session of the Senate." Obi-Wan resisted the urge to sigh. It would not help. He'd known that was going to happen, too, but there had been nothing he could do to prevent it.
"The charges are baseless, Your Highness. Both Master Jin and I know him personally, and you can take the word of two Jedi for the fact that there is not a corrupt bone in that man's body."
Amidala graced him with another smile. "You both seem to have quite the disdain for career politicians, so I understand that to be a great compliment."
"One that is well deserved," Obi-Wan agreed. "However, until those issues are resolved, the vice chair holds sway."
Her eyes darkened. "So I've been told. And the Senate?"
"The Trade Federation representative will protest your accusation, probably before you can even finish your petition," Obi-Wan said. "They will huff and puff, demanding that a committee be appointed, and it will be months before anyone sees a result. You're aware of what becomes of petitions that are sent to the courts, yes?"
She sighed and nodded. The tassels of her headpiece jingled like tiny bells. "Senator Palpatine feels that the election of a new chancellor would sway events in my favor. What do you think, Knight Kenobi?" Obi-Wan was hard-pressed not to stare at her. It was a new piece of the puzzle falling into place, and explained much of what had happened the first time he'd lived through these events. "Is this the start of the entire mess? Swaying a young ruler into calling for Valorum's dismissal, so that Palpatine doesn't have to dirty his own hands?"
"I think that Senator Palpatine is being overly optimistic," Obi-Wan said, choosing his words with care.
How so?
Obi-Wan rested his hands on his knees so that he wouldn't be tempted to grip them into fists.
Even if Valorum was unseated today, elections would still take several days to complete. Palpatine has no way of knowing who will replace him.
Well, he does, but I'm not supposed to know that, Obi-Wan thought bitterly.
Your first concern is that a new leader might not be sympathetic to your plight. Even then, the new Chancellor would have to contend with many of the same problems, and your petition may still be sent to the courts. More importantly, a new Chancellor would have to work for the backing of the Senate majority, backing that Valorum already has, depending on the vote in question.
Obi-Wan hesitated. What he told her next was less true than it once was in his other life, but not enough to make a significant difference.
The Trade Federation has a strong presence in the Senate, Your Highness. Their supporters would stand to lose a great deal of money if something happened to the Federation, and they will work to make sure that does not happen. Without proof of a very specific nature, there is little that can be done politically.
Obi-Wan had even brought the means to collect that proof on the Naboo mission, adding a tiny vidcorder to his gear. It had been tucked into his belt pouch when they stepped off the Radiant Seven, but fortune had not smiled upon it. Obi-Wan's initial dunking on Naboo had destroyed the device's sensitive innards.
Proof, Amidala repeated in a bitter voice. The word of the Queen of Naboo will not be good enough, will it? Not even the word of two Jedi, speaking of the atrocities facing my people, will sway the Senate if they choose to be blind.
No, Obi-Wan replied, allowing her to see his regret. It will not sway them.
Amidala lifted her head, her mouth set in a grim line. Then maybe it is time that someone did something new. She stood up, her expression settling into a serene mask worthy of any Jedi. I must still try. If I fail, her eyes glinted with stubborn resolve. I will solve this conflict in any way necessary.
Obi-Wan stood as well and gave her a short bow. He knew well the strength of Padme Amidala's convictions.
Send word to the council, or to myself, when a decision has been made, he said.
Whether the Senate's decision or her own, that was up to Amidala.
We will help you if we can.
I will. Amidala moved to depart, and then paused. Obi-Wan, thank you. Obi-Wan smiled.
Padme, you are quite welcome.
After Queen Amidala left, he remained in the observation room for a few minutes, watching the pods. The great room was almost three-quarters full, with representatives from thousands of worlds making ready to hear the Queen of Naboo speak out against the Trade Federation. Senator Palpatine was waiting in the pod granted to the Chamal Sector. Obi-Wan used the screen's controls to enhance the image. Palpatine was smiling at one of his neighbors, an expression that appeared kind, benevolent, and utterly genuine. Maul's appearance had cemented all of his old doubts into certainty. And yet...
Force, help me. I don't know what to do, he whispered.
Anakin caught up with him in the outer hall, which was less crowded now that the dome's residents were almost in place. Padawans weren't supposed to fidget, but as Obi-Wan felt much the same, he ignored the display of nerves.
"What is it, Anakin?"
To his surprise, Anakin grinned up at him. "I think Master Qui-Gon had a brainstorm after we left, Master. About 30 minutes ago, Chancellor Valorum called for a press conference and told the media all about the Trade Federation and what they'd really done on Naboo. Master, they're eating it up. Look at this." Anakin revealed the mini holo projector in his hands, activating it and flipping through the news feeds. The invasion of Naboo was the prime subject, with updates scrolling beneath various talking heads who were nattering on about the potential political upheavals. Obi-Wan realized he was gazing at the projection in astonishment.
"You're not kidding. Is there anything about the hearing?"
"Yeah," Anakin confirmed. "Emergency meeting or not, everyone knows all about it now. They're trying to guess at what the Queen will say. They're talking about how the Senate is supposed to protect planets under its jurisdiction, and if they don't move to end the embargo, it'll look bad for pretty much everyone involved." Anakin shut down the projector. "Do you think it'll do any good?" Obi-Wan shook his head.
"I don't know, Padawan, but it will certainly rile them up. Finnis couldn't have timed that better."
"Good," Anakin said with an obstinate frown. "They're mean to him. It's about time he got to step on their toes." Obi-Wan hid a smile.
"Don't tell anyone, but I agree with you."
He turned his attention to his pair bond with Qui-Gon, and what he sensed made him scowl.
Come on. We have to go back to the temple before the council causes your other master to tear his hair out."
Obi-Wan might not know how to deal with Palpatine, but he sure as hell knew how to motivate the complacent.